Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Stan.
Oh, my God. It is so amazing to meet you.
You didn't actually meet before?
No, we spoke on the phone.
Okay. I was trying to figure out this in 2013. I was like, I don't think I was in London.
No, you weren't. So it was on the phone, so I've never actually met you.
But
it was
amazing to see you.
This is the Dan Wotton interview, and I couldn't be more excited about today's episode. Ricky Lake, one of the talk show greats and icon of the 90s, is here to open up about her life. Genuinely, Ricky Lake means so much to me. There are not many celebrities that I've had on this podcast that I could say have had more of a direct impact on my life. And that is because I spent my years from when I was 10 years old to when I was 21 years old, essentially learning about the world, learning about how to live through Ricky Lake's incredible self-titled chat show. Of course, she has had a life like no other. She opens up about that life like no one else. So today we're going to talk about the tragic death of her husband. We're going to talk about why she now has the need for a therapy dog, who's actually arrived to be in the room with us for the interview. We're going to talk about her appearance, of course, on X Factor Celebrity, how she cheated death in a fire, which she lit herself, and also how 9/11 changed her life in such a dramatic way. This is a must-listen interview. We have lots in our back catalogue, though, as well. Celine Dion, Madonna, loads more of A-list stars, from Sam Smith to Ed Sheeran. So all you need to do is subscribe right now to the Dan Wotton interview, and you can listen back free to all of those interviews. You'll also get the next one as soon as it becomes available. At the end of my interview with Ricky Lake as well, do stay tuned, because we've got a lot of discussion about one of my recent interviews with James Blunt. But right now, my goodness, I am excited. Let's go up close and in depth. Here is Ricky Lake. Ricky Lake. Honestly, I cannot tell you how exciting this is for me, genuinely.
Thank you.
I've interviewed you once before, but it was over the phone.
So what was it for? What was I promoting?
It was for the return of your chat show.
Okay.
In 2000 and...
It was 2012 or 2013?
Or 2012, yeah, 2012. Maybe actually, I think January 2013.
Did it run here in the UK?
Yeah, it did.
Oh, see, I didn't even
it
know
did.
That.
On quite a small channel.
Small channel for a very short time. But I learned a valuable lesson that I don't want to do talk shows anymore. It was a really challenging time, because going back on the air for me was a huge deal. You know, I did my last talk show for 11 years, and I walked away from that at that time in my life. So to go back to it, I really wanted to do something, because I felt like I had something to say, and the people I was in business with didn't really want to do something that was like smart and elevated content. They wanted to do more like insipid kind of content. So it wasn't what I wanted to do, but I won the Emmy anyway.
I know.
Which was amazing. And it was so funny.
Your first Emmy.
My first and only Emmy. I'd been nominated before, but to win, and I was in Ibiza. I was with my husband, who's no longer with us, but we were like at a club. I mean, it was just like we were out and about late at night.
So it was worth doing it for that alone?
100%. Absolutely, it was worth
it. Just to say, Emmy award winning, Ricky Lake.
Yes.
But look, honestly, your show growing up for me meant so much. And I was looking back at the dates actually last night, and it makes perfect sense to me now, right? Because Ricky Lake came on the air when I was 10 years old.
Okay.
And at that point, so I'm growing up in New Zealand, guy obviously struggling with his sexuality, knowing deep down that I'm gay, but thinking, actually, is this world ever going to be safe enough for me to come out? Which at that point, I didn't think it was. Mm. Then when you were off air, when you decided to leave the show, I was 21 and I was starting to accept my sexuality. Obviously, growing up, I'd moved to the UK, I'd come out, and I just think, wow, you were there for me through that entire time of my adolescence, my growing up, and my understanding actually about what the world was, because the 90s was such a fascinating time of social change, and you were at the forefront of it.
Unbeknownst to me, like the truth is, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I hear that so many times, so many gay people come up to me and say, you helped me come to terms with myself or learn to love myself or see myself represented on TV. And for me, you know, having been exposed to the business via John Waters and Divine and that whole world, it was second nature for me to treat everybody the same. It never at the time thought, oh, we're doing something that's like, you know, breaking the mold of like treating all couples, gay couples, biracial couples, everyone treated the same. But it's just how I was instinctively, I always was, you know?
Of course, but at the time that was not normal on TV.
I understand that now, but at the time we, you know, it just felt so normal.
And natural to you. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy also when I think that when you came on air, because to me, you obviously, there's not a huge age gap now, but at the time I viewed you as an adult, you know, a bit of a guiding light. But in fact, when you came on air, Ricky, you were only 24 years old.
I was 24. I was 23 when they hired me.
Oh my God.
And so, but you look at that, you think, what nerve, like who was I to think like I had, I didn't know who I was. And it's only now that I look back on my journey and where I am in my life. I mean, I'm so much better as like me now, you know, age, you know, that's something that comes with age, you know, the life experience that you have, you really get to know yourself. And for me, it's, I look at the trajectory of my career through trauma. I kind of found myself. I found my path. I found my passion. I found out like the things I really care about. And during that show, the time of the show, I mean, I was just so green and so young. I literally would channel Oprah in the beginning. You know, they said I could do a talk show. Okay, I can do it. Just like Hairspray. John Waters picked me to play Tracy Turnblad. Sure. He thinks I can dance. Okay. You know, I just kind of jump in and assume I can do it. And same for the show. I really haven't studied singing in a really long time, but they think I can do a pretty good job. Okay. Where's my key light? Where's my microphone? You know?
No, but it is fascinating because I think obviously Oprah for baby boomers was absolutely the chat show host, and she meant so much to them, and definitely in terms of society as well, what she did and how much ground she broke was amazing. But for my generation, for sort of the older group of millennials, it was actually Ricky Lake that really guided our life because we were very much in touch with the themes on that show.
Yeah, well, and that was a concerted effort on the part of the people producing my show. It was, the topic was always the same as Oprah. Mm. It was just always from the younger person's perspective. So, you know, Oprah would do a show like, I don't understand my daughter, she blah, 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 and my mother's driving me crazy. Yeah. So it was just that little trick, and we were able to tap into this really fun, urban, outspoken, sometimes really inappropriate audience that, you know, it's like back in New York when the show was in its heyday, you know, it was a year-long waiting list to get tickets.
Yeah.
It was just like the thing to do. And it was just my life. I didn't have the reverence for it that I do now. You know, I don't miss my show, but I'm so grateful I had that platform, especially at a time pre-Twitter and pre-social media, you know, to be doing that and have the immediacy now of the nastiness. I mean, I just, I feel like my show was amazing at that time. And I love the work I do now. I make documentaries. I'm not sure you're familiar,
but
I'm really proud of the work that I do these days. It doesn't, you know, pay the bills like a talk show, but it's, I've done that. Like I made enough money where I can really focus on things that I feel are important and I think are really making a difference.
And I guess you have this generation of people like me who will forever be really engaged with what you do as a result of that show.
Thank you.
It gave you such a powerful audience.
I think people like rooted for me. You know, I think it's like, unlike Oprah, who I love, I mean, she was like my mentor from afar, but I mean, she was the person trying to help everybody live their best lives. For me, I'm like, okay, I'm a mess too. Let's figure this out together. You know, that's the mode that I'm in. I think, you know, in everything I've done, my audience, my very loyal fan base has had my back.
Absolutely. And we saw you grow up, which I want to talk
I'm 51
about.
Now. And you're, how old are you then?
I'm 36.
There's a huge age difference. That's like a generational difference. If you, when you were 10 when I was on the air at 24. So there you go.
I know, but it's not a huge gap now, is it?
I feel more youthful now than even in my 20s and 30s when I was doing my show. I was so judgmental. I was so fear-filled. Mm. Now, I mean, I go to Burning Man. I have like purple in my hair. I mean, I'm just like, I'm definitely like going backwards in a lot of ways. And I'm having a lot of fun.
But I think there's lots about the 90s, though, that you look back on and cringe, because as society, we were just not as developed. And actually, there's a big controversy now with Friends, for example, because you have lots of the young, I think they're called Generation Y, aren't they? You know, the really young kids who watch Friends and say, oh, that's so inappropriate. How can you make jokes about trans issues like that or talk about gay people like that?
Oh, interesting.
But I think what that generation misses the point about, right, is that actually, if it wasn't being joked about on Friends and if it wasn't being talked about on The Ricky Lake Show, it simply wasn't on TV. Mm. Those conversations had to start somewhere.
It's true. And like Ellen coming out during that time,
yeah.
I mean, I can't remember what year that was.
But yeah, I think it was about 95, 96.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that was revelatory. I mean, it was just massive. And so you think about how much things have changed in that time. You know, we've gone backwards and we've gone way forward.
The Five. This week, we're going to change things up a bit.
Okay.
Because, of course, we're joined by a big TV legend who has done everything from starring in huge movies to hosting her own television show. So I want to know, what are the biggest and most memorable special TV moments for you and why they have such a special place
that I've been
in your
on
heart?
Them?
Yeah,
like
that
TV?
You've been on.
Okay, well, so the last thing I did on TV that I really loved was I was on my favorite TV series called Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. So I just did a cameo and I sang with Amber Riley. We played little dream girls. Have you ever watched the show?
I haven't.
It's the
I've
best
heard
show.
About it, though.
It's the best show.
It's on Netflix,
I think. It's about mental health. It's actually about mental health. I really recommend you watch it. I think it's on Netflix. It's called Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Rachel Bloom is a genius on par, in my opinion, to Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Phoebe Waller-Bridge,
amazing.
I'm dying to go out with her one night here in London.
Come on, Phoebe.
That's like, I am manifesting that, okay? What else? What other TV moments? I did a TV show called Baby Cakes. It was a movie that people loved in the 90s. Or it actually was 89, but it came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's another TV moment. What else? I did Dancing with the Stars. That was a huge accomplishment for me.
And you were with Derek Hough.
I was with Derek Hough. I came in third. And that was to become a dancer.
Beaten by Rob Kardashian.
No. Well, he got second. He didn't win.
Who
got
won?
Second. The winner was this guy named J.R. Martinez. And he was like a war hero burn victim.
Okay.
Like, there was no way I was going to win.
No.
Yeah. And he was an amazing dancer as well.
Okay, that's three.
That's three. Oh, God.
What about The Masked Singer?
And The Masked Singer was amazing. It was really fun.
So you were a character called The Raven.
I chose The Raven. They let me pick whoever I wanted to be, and that really resonated with me because of my story and just losing my love and coming out of that darkness. It's just, again, it was like something that was really cathartic for me. So that was really surprisingly very fun, and I can't believe how people are still talking about that show.
Yeah.
But that, and then what else? My talk show, I guess, right?
It has to be.
Yeah.
What would you say is your favorite moment from The Ricky Lake Show?
That's impossible to say because I did like 2,200 hours of television.
Is there one moment that stands out?
I mean, I had a baby. They had a surprise baby shower for me, which was really funny because we had John Waters came on and my actual friend, like my friend Trisha. And so there was all these like people that I did, like Mary Lou Retton was on, and I don't know her. And then like all these like famous, but I don't know them. And John Waters goes, like, who are these people? Like, he's like, what? You know, it was just one of those things. I don't know. I mean, I like doing shows that were topics that resonated with me that, you know, I could relate to, you know?
Oh, I love it. Great choices. What a career. What a TV career.
I've been here a long time.
And who knows, maybe the X Factor Celebrity will get added to the list.
Maybe.
But then you have a life-changing moment, as so many people do, on September 11, 2001, mm-hmm. because, of course, you filmed your show in New York. You were so synonymous with New York. But like so many people that day who were in New York, clearly it's going to massively make you think about life. And is it true that you actually witnessed the second plane going in
the
building?
I did, yeah, I did.
Son.
I lived in the West Village, and I just had my second son in my home. I had a water birth 2 months prior, so I was a new mom. I was lactating, and I was watching it on the TV, and the first plane, they said it was just a small plane. Mm. It was an accident, so we went to the roof of our building. I went with my four-year-old and my then-husband, and assuming, you know, we're just going to see this small plane on fire. And so my husband was taking pictures of we had a full view, and I saw the other plane coming down the Hudson. And it was just one of those, like, you see it, and it's like slow motion. What's that guy doing? What's that guy doing? And then screaming bloody murder and really thinking you're going to die. I mean, I really thought my dad, I thought it was the end of the world. And I had a moment of like a real like moment of clarity where I said, if I live through this day, I'm doing X, Y, and Z and leaving New York, leaving my job and leaving my husband. I mean, it was like very clear. And it took a while to make all of those things happen, but I ended up walking away from the show. I didn't quit my show because I would have been sued, but I ended my I didn't renew my contract. And made the move to LA. And that's when I started soul searching about what I wanted to do next. Where can I make a difference? You know, I loved my show and my show was an amazing platform. And we did a lot of great things for people like you and for, you know, a lot of people that felt like they were the underdog, not being seen or heard and represented. But I really wanted to find what I was truly passionate about. And it really was about birth and options, you know, knowing your options, having informed consent, those kinds of things. And so went on to make my first documentary.
Yeah, and that documentary was incredibly powerful. Wasn't it because you spoke about the fact that when you gave birth, it was really the first time that you were able to feel, I guess, properly comfortable with your body after you were, you know.
It definitely helped to heal from a lot of, you know, issues that women face with body dysmorphia and just hating, you know, constantly beating ourselves up. I was a sexual abuse survivor as a child. So that it was a very healing experience to see what my body could do. You know, I mean, pregnancy in itself is like to see the miracle of life, to feel life inside of you is one of those feelings that I'll never forget. But giving birth on my own terms in my home space with a midwife, with doula, was life-changing beyond just being becoming a mom.
And I think that's one of the reasons why the show was such a success, because you were always honest about these things that you had gone through in life. But I guess it was really only in your book, which I think came out around 2013, when you really spoke about the true trauma of what you went through as a child in terms of the sex assault and the fact that your parents were aware of it and you never really talked about it. And I was just wondering if
they were aware once I told them. They didn't know it was going on until I told them, right? And it was one of those, you know, this was in the late 70s and it wasn't talked about. Like, you know, just push everything under the rug, which is what the way my parents dealt with most things growing up anyway. It was like everything looked rosy and perfect on the outside and, you know, there was so much more that wasn't being discussed going on the inside. But yeah, it's funny because that experience of being taken advantage of as a little girl is what caused me to turn to food, which is what caused me to be overweight and obese, which caused me to get the biggest break of my life, which is Tracy Turnblad and hairspray. So again, it's like trauma ended up turning it into a gift and turning it into a positive. Obviously, I wish that never happened to me, but it was part of my story. It's part of my journey. It's part of, you know, made me so strong. And, you know, it's just, it's all part of it, you know?
Do you think it's what has made you such a great communicator as well?
I think it absolutely doesn't hurt. Yeah, I think I've had life experience where I can definitely have empathy for people from different, you know, that have gone through it. And one thing that I found that when I did talk about my experience in my early 20s, I found out that it happened to so many more people. You know, at the time, I felt like it only happened to me. You know, I felt like it just was interesting. Once you unleash this secret, it isn't such a big deal. And that was pretty healing, I think.
Now, you talk about your weight, and that was the other area, actually, where I so engaged with you, because I was obese as a teenager, then I lost a huge amount of my body weight. And again, it was you and Oprah that really were the first people of such a high profile to talk about the emotional reasons behind why you might end up overweight. And it's always an urban myth with Oprah, but I don't know if it was the same thing with you. So tell me, because I imagine you looked at this stuff. But there was always this discussion in the 90s that the ratings for Oprah's show were directly connected to her weight. So when she was very overweight, the ratings would go up. And when she lost a lot of weight, the ratings would go down. Did you ever experience the same thing?
I didn't pay attention to it. I mean, my weight would fluctuate because I had two pregnancies during the shooting of my show. So I got as big as, you know, 200 pounds when I gave birth to my first child. I don't remember looking at the ratings and checking like where I stood on the scale. But my weight fluctuates, you know, it's like, and I just lost about 20 pounds from when I shot X Factor in July because I saw myself and I was like, oh my God. I lost my husband. My second husband passed away 2.5 years ago. I have been through it. Like I have been through like the absolute depths of despair. And so I really seize this opportunity. I wanted to feel good in my skin, and I was ready to shed that extra.
Well, you are looking absolutely incredible. But I know for me, I always say to people, look, this is the battle of my life.
You know,
it's never ever going to be over. It's just an ongoing battle, which sometimes you're going to lose and other times you're going to conquer.
It's true. And, you know, I'm now, like I said, I'm 51 years old. I'm in a beautiful relationship with this amazing man. I feel very in touch with my body. I feel very liberated, and my body works. I'm basically out of, like, I don't have any pain anywhere. Mm. You know, like, I have to appreciate, I don't look my age. I haven't had anything done to my face. Like,
have
so
you not?
Many people, nothing. I mean, I did Botox
very...
like 6 years ago once, you know. I know nothing. I have some fake eyelashes and some fake hair. That's it.
But, and that's like, so rare in California.
I don't, yeah, but.
And you do look so young.
I'm not opposed to it. I'm not opposed to it, but I don't need to do it. And, like, I don't have any real wrinkles yet, right?
And are you wearing...
No, this is radio, but...
And are you wearing makeup today?
No, well, I have makeup from 2 nights ago.
Because, honestly, you do... You have an angelic, cherub-like, youthful
face. Thank you. Thank
you
so much. I think the key is having a little extra weight on.
Yeah.
I think it makes us look younger.
I'm going to go with
that. But it's not my plan. It's not, like, a conscious effort, but I think that is, like, the secret. It's, like, having a fuller face.
But when you go the other way, you do go the other way, though, because I remember in, I think you did Dancing with the Stars in about 2008.
Yes.
And you were saying...
2011.
2011. And you were saying there were times when you actually had to be on an IV drip and
no, that was on a movie set. Oh my God, you did do your homework. But that was on a movie set in Halifax, Nova Scotia, when I got really obsessive about weight loss and I was down to 120 pounds, which I don't know what it is for you guys, but 120
What's
pounds.
What's that in kilograms?
Super, like... My, like, it's ridiculous. I should never, ever, I was not healthy, but I had to be hospitalized and I had an IV drip and all I could care about, this is so bad to be even talking about, but I was wanting to be on the scale and know what I weighed. But no, I'm at a pretty much healthy weight now. I'd like, you know, I can fit into my old clothes and I feel it's about balance. It's
old
about,
clothes are always the key, aren't they?
Old clothes that don't have an elastic waist.
Yeah. I refuse to weigh myself now, actually.
Yeah, that's
and I
good.
Base it all on clothes.
Yeah. Well, you look good to me.
I think it's healthier. Thank you so much. But it is hard. And I think that was definitely something where, again, you open the floodgates for people to actually open up and acknowledge that sometimes you might put on a lot of weight for something that isn't just about eating lots of food. Because, again, that sounds obvious now, but actually, in the 90s, there wasn't really an understanding about emotional eating,
right.
For example.
Yeah. I agree. I think so. I mean, and again, it was just me sharing what I was going through. It wasn't, you know, a concerted effort to, like, teach people or be a role model. You know, I never really looked at myself that way. I don't look at myself that way right now. I think I'm just, like, a work in progress trying to be my best self, you know?
And we have to say, Mama.
Yes.
Is here today in
Mama,
the room.
It's a miracle of miracles, honestly.
So Mama is your rescue dog.
She's my rescue therapy dog. So I say I rescued Mama, but then she rescued me.
What type of dog is she?
She's a Shih Tzu poodle rescue. She's 100% awesome. And she doesn't shed. She doesn't bark. And, you know, she's portable. And we became besties. And then when my husband took his life and succumbed to mental illness in February of 2017, she legally became my therapy dog. So she was with me everywhere. You know, when I drive my car, she sits on my lap and it's like this calming presence and it's palpable. I mean, everyone who's in her presence, including this crew, they're in love. They're on the ground with her and she's just like medicine for everybody. And I'm really grateful to have been able to bring her here with me because 2 months, we could never have been apart for 2 months.
And it's incredible how open you've been about the death of Christian, who was your husband, but of course you had divorced, hadn't you?
Mm-hmm.
You went
I had
through
a divorce,
but your relationship rekindled.
We were always together, you know. Bipolar disorder is one of those really complicated, confusing illnesses that I didn't really know. I had no experience. I didn't know what it was. He told me when we first met that he'd been diagnosed bipolar, and I assumed it was like a trait, like me being a control freak. I'm a crazy Virgo who's completely, you know, like that's what I equated to. It was like a character flaw, but it's a really debilitating, destructive illness that when you know it, and he struggled with depression and chronic pain, and yet he was my favorite person I've ever known. I mean, honestly, he was so gifted. They say that, you know, genius and madness go hand in hand, you know, and I was never happier than when I was with him. And it's just a tragedy that I don't think I'll ever fully recover from. But again, this traumatic experience and this beautiful love affair that turned into such a loss, I've gotten so many gifts out of it, you know? And the new relationship that I'm in now, you know, it's like he's amazing and he's like the healthy version of Christian. Mm. You know, he's really someone who truly loves himself, because Christian is as gifted and special and, you know, what he brought to my life, he was very self-loathing and didn't love himself. And so I'm with a man named Jeff now who's really like a gift, you know.
After Christian's death, you also plunged quite understandably into your own depression.
It's funny, it's interesting that it didn't take place. Like my lowest of low was like 7 or 8 months after he passed, because when he passed, I had to go into like self-preservation.
You run on adrenaline, don't you?
Just are like making all these, I can't even, like, saying it out loud now, what I had to, because I was in London when he passed. I was doing a show, I was guest judging a show called Let It Shine.
Yes.
So it was a live show. I was so excited to do the show.
Take that show, yeah.
Yes. And so I was on this high, and we were about to go to Chiltern Firehouse. We were about to like go on this with my friend Havana, who's with me here now. And I got the call from his sister and then the email that I saw, and I knew he was gone from reading the email. I felt him leave. And it was just, I don't even know how I got home to LA. I can't remember. Havana helped me. Somehow I had to cancel my appearance on Loose Women. I mean, it was like all these things that happened. And then I got home, and you have to like deal with a coroner, and you deal with, and his family and his wishes and a funeral arrangement. I mean, it was so beyond, I don't even remember how I did it all. And he was my favorite person. I mean, I could, like, if I go there, I could really get teary-eyed. But he was literally the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, he taught me so much about, like, I'm such a better person having had him, loved him, and lost him, you know? And, it's just, it's really nice to be back in London after going through such a traumatic experience and to have these new memories, these new experiences. And I do feel that he's with me.
Because you would have had some type of PTSD as a result of going through something that. Because even just the trauma of being out of the country is big enough to begin with.
And I have 2 children that are not his biologically, but he was with them for 6.5 years, you know, through their teenage years. Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's been my cross to bear, just coming to terms with, like, this is part of my story, and this is, you know, I believe he spared me. He didn't leave me. You know, this illness only gets worse when they're not medicated. And, you know, there are many people who are functioning and able to find medication and care that gives them a healthy and happy life. In the case of my husband, medication didn't work for him. He was an empath, and it made him a zombie, and maybe he wasn't patient enough to try all the different medications, but
Well, what's so difficult, though, is that sometimes medications for bipolar will work for a period, and sometimes it will work for a period of many, many years, even.
Yes, yes, and then stop.
And then something clicks. So, because I have people close to me in my own life who've suffered from bipolar, and actually one good friend of mine who actually did commit suicide, but was,
you know, we're not supposed to say commit suicide. I learned, and I'm constantly learning, but we're supposed to say death by suicide because of the stigma. I guess it's not a selfish act. People think it's a selfish act. It's actually a really courageous act and selfless. In the case of my husband, it was a selfless act. So I learned early on.
No, I have heard with this these groups, actually.
Yeah, that we're supposed to say death by suicide. So it's really out of their control. Yeah. Just like cancer, like it's not their fault. Mm. You know?
Well, she was. It was quite a miracle actually. She was brought back to life, and after about a good 15 minutes, and now has lived an incredible life with bipolar and has had 2 kids herself.
God.
So I know quite a lot about bipolar as a result, and the depths. And then I also see people who get through it, but it's a crazy illness because it affects everything. It affects the way you spend money. It affects your sense of humor.
Christian had 2 episodes while we were together. So we were together for 6.5 years. He had them a bunch before we met, but I didn't know, and he didn't want me to know. And so 2014 was the first episode. And, you know, first it presents because he always had depression. So he always was in pain. It was hard to motivate, hard to get out of bed. So it was really like, oh my gosh, he has all these ideas. And he's like, you know, doing yoga in the morning, like all these. I was like, wow, he's on fire.
Totally.
And then it just keeps going higher and higher and higher to where he thinks he can fly. He left his Range Rover on the side of the road on a freeway because he could time travel and he didn't need it anymore. The $90,000 Range Rover he didn't need. I mean, like, crazy. And I just didn't see it coming. And he had to be... Then they crash. You know, what goes up has to come down. So then he becomes suicidal. And then we put him in a treatment center. It was just like, I didn't know what to do. And the second time, I had to save myself. It was just so... It was so outrageous.
No, of course, because it's so difficult for friends and family. But one of the things that I have loved about the way that you have spoken about Christian, because I've read a lot of what you've said, is that so often, I think friends and family members of people who sometimes lose their life because of these mental health issues often feel shame themselves, because there can be a lot of judgment from society, you know, of the husbands, the wives, the brothers, the sisters, the mums and the dads, which if you have dealt with someone that has a mental illness like that, you know that usually the people around them have done so much, and just nothing will ever be enough. And I love the way you talk about it, because there's no shame attached. And I think that's so important.
I did everything I could. And I know in my heart that by sharing my story, I'm helping other people, because, you know, we need to support each other. And all of us, I mean, look at the time that what we're going through in our lives right now is so traumatized. You read the paper, you read the news, both in this country and in my country. It is depressing for all of us. So I think we need to all, you know, need to start loving each other, getting rid of the judgment, getting rid of the stigma. And with Christian, I mean, I know in my heart, by sharing our story, I don't want him to have died in vain. I would love to help others by being honest and transparent about what
you
I'm
are,
going
because
through.
Not many people do talk about, especially losing a husband or a wife by suicide. Have you seen the musical Dear Evan Hansen?
I have, yes.
What was that like for you?
It was powerful. I mean, I actually, I mean, it's funny you say that, because that's one of the songs I sang on this show.
No, oh my goodness, which one?
You Will Be Found.
Oh my God, don't. They have to show that X Factor people.
I don't know. I don't know if that's the one they show, but if it isn't the one they show, I would hope to sing it. Me too. And it was like...
That must have been really tough.
It's cathartic. No, it's cathartic. It's like, and that's my, you know, because I'm not the best singer in this competition, just so you know. Heads up, people. I can carry a tune, but I'm a good storyteller, and the songs I want to sing are songs that resonate with me, you know. I wanted to sing that on The Masked Singer, and they couldn't clear it because they didn't know who was singing it, because it's a secret. So I was like, when they asked me to do this show, I was like, oh, I want to sing that song, you know.
So they were able to clear
it. It was like a dream, yeah.
Because I found that musical so powerful. I mean, it's about to come to the West End.
I'm going to go to the opening with my director, because Abby is my partner. I make my documentaries. She works with Michael Greif. She did Rent with Michael Greif, who's the director of Dear Evan Hansen. So I think we're going to go to the opening. As long as I'm not working on this show,
make
this little
sure
X Factor
not.
Show. But as long as I'm free, I'm going to go to the opening of that.
Because I think it's a really amazing, powerful thing. And I'm so glad it's coming to the West End, because, you know, it is the first musical that has ever tackled suicide. And it sounds like...
Well, Next to Normal. Did you ever see Next to
Normal?
No. That was also a show about mental illness. It's a beautiful show. Did it ever make it to London?
No.
It was so incredible show. Yeah, again, also about mental health.
Because I think what's so interesting about Dear Evan Hansen is it takes something that you would think would be so dark, and this world of social media and everything that young people have to go through, but actually there is an overall message of hope. But I went to see it in Broadway.
Did you see it with the guy, the main guy?
No, it was after he had left, actually, Ben Platt, who's just incredible, and he's so amazing.
He's not doing it here. No, he's not.
But it was incredible afterwards. I've never had a moment like it in the theatre. I was on my own, but there were literally about 20 people in the front rows who just could not leave the theatre because they were sobbing. You know, they were there hugging friends and relatives, and it was so clear to me that they were family members of or friends of people who they'd lost to suicide. And I just think to explore it in that way creatively.
Yes.
So that's a perfect song for you, Ricky.
Well, yeah, I don't want to give it away, but yeah, this other song I may sing also is about loss and suicide, and so
so you are spreading the message. It's really
I'm doing the best that I can. I mean, it's I don't know how else to be. I've been an open book my entire 30 plus career, you know, whether it's about my weight or it's about any sort of hardship I've had, I've always been really transparent. And so I don't know how else to how do you stop that at 50 years of age, you know? Even with my new relationship, you know, my new guy is super private and he's had to come to terms with that. I'm like, I'm an oversharer.
And that is why we love you.
He loves that about me. But I think, you know, if he had his choice, he'd have me be a keep something to the imagination.
And he's a fashion designer, is that right?
Well, he is. He's way more than that. He's really, he's all about doing everything he can to help the planet. And so he has this whole ethos behind his business, which is called One Golden Thread, and it's beautiful.
And how did you meet? How does Ricky Lake go about meeting a bloke?
I wasn't looking, to be honest. I was actually, you know, it was now, at that point, it was like just 2.5 years after I'd lost Christian, and I was just finding my joy. You know, I had gone to Burning Man a couple of times, and I was just in a real place of, like, loving my life again and being in a true place of gratitude. And I went to this gathering that my girlfriend had, and she called us all light workers. She brought in, like, all these really cool people doing cool things, and he walked in, and he reminded me of my husband. He really, like, there's an essence and a quality about him. And we got to talking, and I liked him immediately. I mean, it's like, I thought I was asexual at this point. Like, I honestly was like, there's no one I'm interested in. And then when I met him, I was like, I want that. And it took him a little while to see me that way, but then I wore him down.
And the Burning Man. This is the music festival, right?
Oh my God, it's so not a music festival. I would not describe it as a music festival.
How would you describe it?
It is the best place on the planet. And it's literally the best place on the planet.
And it's near New York, is that
right? No. Oh my gosh. I got
to
teach you some things.
Okay,
Burning Man is a city that is created for 1 week out of the year, every year. It's been going on for more than 20 years, maybe 30. I mean, I'm not sure of the dates.
I've heard of it.
It's art, it's music, it's a fully running city where there's no commerce, there's no exchange of money. Everyone brings their own gifts. So whether it's building this city, and it's 75,000 people, it's massive. And for me, and I've really kind of tried to figure out why it is that I discovered this place at 48 years of old age, it's the place where I can be completely free. Everyone can be whoever they choose to be. You are completely accepted. Everyone is operating on their highest vibe. Mm. And I get to tap into my inner child. You know, I think my childhood was kind of robbed from me in a lot of ways. Mm. And I really get to be that little girl again. And it's magic. It's a very special place.
Firsts. Ricky Lake, what was your first job?
I did an episode of the TV series Fame.
First time you felt famous?
When I was an answer in the New York Times crossword puzzle.
First guest you remember on Ricky Lake?
Oof, the most memorable one was this guy, Reverend Fred Phelps, in my first season. He was the guy who protested gay people's funerals, and he was this vile, and I kicked him off my show.
First thing you do in the morning?
Well, it depends if my man is in bed with me or not. okay, I'll say brush my teeth.
First dance you learned?
First dance. Oh, mashed potato.
First memory of your childhood?
Singing to Shirley Temple.
Last. The last thing that made you laugh?
Oh my goodness. My dog.
Last person to text message you?
My man.
Last Instagram post.
Oh, where I was last night at my friend Marta Leyva. I was at the Round Chapel seeing Marta Leyva.
Right. Amazing.
That's my last post.
Last album that you love.
Oh, Lana Del Rey.
Last thing that made you cry.
Talking about Christian.
Last time you used public transport.
Yesterday, 2 days ago, I did the... Oh, yeah. Do you want to hear something crazy?
Yeah.
No, do you want to... So I had to leave the country. I came into the country and had to leave because my passport, the woman in immigration forgot to stamp my passport for my work visa. So what they told me, this was on Tuesday, I had to 20 minutes to get... I had to take a car to the Victoria Station, to take a train to Gatwick, then take a shuttle, then land in Paris, then, it was planes, trains, and automobiles to go back for the night and stamp my passport again.
Did you get to have a night in Paris, though?
I had one night in Paris. Are you kidding? Yes,
That's
I did.
Cool. That's
and I
cool.
took the tube on the way back in. It was going to take a 2-hour drive from Gatwick back to my place. So we took the train and then the tube.
Love it. Last song you listened to?
Oh, probably Lizzo.
And the last thing you do before bed?
Brush my teeth.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
How old were you when you got Hairspray?
I was 18.
Do you consider yourself as someone who was a child star?
No, I think I missed the boat on that, and I think that kept me normal.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of friends that I've known, like I don't want to say friends, but like people that I know, you know, acquaintances that were famous. And my friend Robin has a theory about it, that people that are famous before they're adults, they're weird. They can be, you know, they have like this weird kind of aloofness or this, you know, untouchable thing. And I'm the opposite of that. No, I think John Waters giving me my break is what kept me sane, you know, and he actually gave me really good advice before Hairspray came out. He sat me down. He's like, look, he's like, I want to tell you that your life is about to change and I want to give you some words of advice. And I said, great. And he said, always stay humble. Always stay true to yourself. And he said, if you're going to read and believe the good things people write about you, you have to read and believe the bad. And those three things just kind of stuck with me. It's like, I think for the most part, I'm very much the same person I was when I was 18. Mm-hmm. I appreciate this opportunity, all the opportunities that I have, but I don't think I'm an asshole. Can I say that?
You can say that.
I don't think, I mean, I think I've got my feet on the ground and it's like I have a real balance too, especially in my life these days.
Yeah, and you've never been someone to me that feels like you've struggled with fame, which so many people do. How has your relationship with fame developed?
Because I'm the perfect type of fame. Like, I'm approachable. People who meet me, they think they grew up with me. They did grow up with me, but they think I went to school with them.
Yeah.
So it's like no one treats me. And it's funny because I can sort of profile someone. If I see someone, if they're gay, they're usually a John Waters fan or the talk show, you know, or if they're a pregnant mom, oh, they know me for my documentary work. Yeah. It's funny like that. I don't
so it
know,
never impinged think, too much on your day-to-day life, even at the height of your fame in the 90s?
Never. I'm like the, well, in the height of the 90s, I mean, I was living in New York and I had a drive, like a security guy that would take me home. I mean, you know, but it was just my normal life. But I would go everywhere. You know, there's never a place, you know, I was never too, too famous. Like, look at some of these movie stars that can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
That was never my life. You know?
So you could always lead a relatively normal life.
I call myself the most unfamous famous person. I mean, even in London, like maybe when the show starts going live, people will notice me. I'm not looking to be noticed, but it's like I'm just going everywhere. You know? Yeah.
And every now and then will people just say, hey,
Ricky?
Now
people know my dog over me, and then
Mama.
I'll be pegged. Exactly.
Mama is more famous.
She was upstaging me on the red carpet the other day. They wrote that.
Ricky, another dramatic thing that happened in your life was the fact that you escaped a house fire.
I did.
In 2010.
I'm like, which one are you going to talk about now? There's been a lot.
I know, so much has gone on. But again, this was another seminal moment, it seems, because you were in the house with your kids,
I accidentally started the fire.
Did you?
I did.
How?
I was lighting this. It wasn't even a candle. It was just a decorative indoor. Like, it had a flame. It had a flame. But it was like a glass dome. And it was about 1 foot on a coffee table like this. And I lit it for the third time and it blew up. And it lit the couch on fire. The whole house was gone. It was a little house, not bigger than, I mean, it was 900 square feet. It's a tiny little beach house. And it was gone within 15 minutes. And we ran out of the house with my two children, my dog at 7 a.m. with the clothes on her back. I had no bra. I had no shoes on. I'm giving you a visual of what that was like. It was incredibly traumatizing. But to this day, I don't know why that fire happened. It was like divine intervention, because that was when I got together with Christian. So it was almost like that fire. He said, I saged the coast of Malibu to find true love.
How did it bring you together?
Well, we had met a few days before that, and he had met my best friend, and we were just introduced, and it was just, there was no attraction or anything. It was just like, oh, you know, he was like, his dog, her friend, my friend was looking after his dog. And then the fire happened, and he was an empath, and he was dealing with like wanting to take his life at that time.
An empath is when you take on other people's emotions, right?
An empath is when you feel other people's pain. Like literally, he could not walk past the news on the TV. It would literally make him physically ill. So he knew, he was all over the news when this fire happened, and he tried to like find me. He couldn't get to me because the whole freeway was closed. And I had a party. My birthday was 3 days later, and I had a party basically celebrating the fact that I was alive. It was that scary. And he came to that party, and that night we got together.
So it may never have happened. So do you believe
it saved his life? Because he was planning to take his life.
God.
I mean, as dramatic as this sounds, this is actually what really happened. I didn't know it until a little bit later he told me. But yeah, it was just... that trauma actually brought us together and kept him alive for another 6.5 years.
So are you a believer in fate?
I am. And I also am a believer like in being open, you know, and surrendering and to trust that the universe will provide, that there is some sort of higher power. I don't know what. I'm not super religious. I consider myself to be spiritual, but I do believe in a power greater than myself. And I do trust that things are going to work out.
Now, another issue that you're very passionate about is marijuana and definitely the use of medical marijuana.
But it's all medicine, but yes.
So this is what I was wanting to clarify, because obviously in this country, which is quite far behind other parts of the world in terms of the legalization of marijuana, the debate is over medical marijuana. But you think it should be legalized like it's legal in California or Nevada?
Well, it's very tricky. So it's, you know, because I think the recreational use has really tripped up the medicinal issue. I think this plant, which is a weed that grows everywhere, should be available to anyone and everyone who needs it and for whatever needs they have. But in the case of the film I made, this was focusing on pediatric cancer and these children that you see suffering, you know, and the film is called Weed the People.
Clearly it should be available for, right? Without any doubt.
It's non-toxic. You can't overdose from it. It literally should, and I'm not a doctor, so I'm not someone, you know, but in the research I've done in making this film over 6 years, it should be the go-to.
Yeah.
It should be the thing you try first because, you know, these other drugs, these cancer drugs are so toxic. They're so damaging. You know, we're talking about little tiny bodies. And yet it's not a medicine that works for everyone. You know, you look at the epilepsy epidemic, it sometimes works for this child and this child will still have seizures. So we all have a unique endocannabinoid system that works in sync with the endocannabinoid system in the plant and the cannabinoids. So basically we are like snowflakes. We're all unique. And so you don't know how the medicine and the strains are going to affect you. And so it's just trial and error. And one thing, you know, it's not regulated. It's not studied in countries like here where it's illegal federally, you know, in the US, you know, and so it's, things are happening. And I think our film is a really great tool for people to get educated about the history of this plant and how it went from being a medicine for thousands and thousands of years to not being a medicine 80 years ago. I mean, it's really crazy.
No, and I am 100% a supporter of legalization for medical use, but I am nervous. And so I'm interested to know your view about widespread legalization, because I have had people in my life who have, I believe, become addicted to marijuana to the point where they struggled to leave the house, they struggled to get to work, if they were unemployed, they weren't able to get another job. And I know a lot of scientists disagree with this, but I have also seen cases where I believe that marijuana can be a gateway drug as well. So what's your view on concerns like that, I guess?
I mean, I think everybody's different, you know? I mean, yes, I've heard there are people that can be addicted to marijuana, but just like any other, you know, alcohol, anything, you know, it's
coffee.
Coffee, sugar. I mean, you know, we're addictive beings. But I think when you watch the film and you look, I mean, we're specific about children struggling with cancer.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, like, that is unquestionable.
Yeah,
no,
but
totally.
So, you know, and in the States, it is tricky, as I said, with the recreational use, it's like different issues, you know, and it's a matter of, like, I think everyone should have access, and I think we should have access to the information. We should be studying these plants. You know, what they're doing in Israel is so exciting. They're able, because it's legal federally, so they're able to actually do these open studies on which strain works for which type of cancer. So, I mean, I'm definitely more focused on the medicinal aspect, but living in California, it is such a blessing to have all these dispensaries have such beautiful medicine and such, and people that are really informed about it. So it's a really nice place to live.
Do you use?
Absolutely, I do, for medicinal and for recreation use. I mean, but I'm not a big, it's not my medicine necessarily, and it certainly wasn't my medicine when I started making the film. We started in 2012, and it was my husband who was passionate about it as a medicine for him and his ailments and his chronic pain and his sleep issues. I mean, all of it. So I find it extremely beneficial for everyone. I give it to my dog, you know.
How does that work?
It's amazing. I give her CBD, which is non-psychoactive, and so it's for wellness, it's for overall inflammation. I mean, it's incredible. And it's a plant. You know?
I would
it's
be nervous because it doesn't make you really hungry.
There's different strains. You can actually, there's a strain, and I think it's called THCV, and it's actually an appetite suppressant. We had this woman that we talked to that lost over 100 pounds.
I want it now.
I'm telling you, I might be wrong about the exact strain, but there are different strains that for different things.
Because genuinely, that is what has always put me off about marijuana.
Oh,
it's like,
really?
Well, I do not need a drug that is going to make me
more hungry.
Munchies.
I know. But it is fun.
Ricky, of course, you are in the UK for X Factor. To celebrity. X Factor has such a tradition and track record in this country going back 15 years. Were you aware of how big a part of UK pop culture X Factor has been?
I mean, I found out because I didn't live here, so I've never really watched it. But of course, I know American Idol. So for me, American Idol was Simon Cowell, and I have loved him since the beginning. I was a fan, like an uber fan, went to the live finale. I actually worked next door to him when they were shooting the show. I was doing another TV show on the same soundstage, so I'd run into him. No, I had no idea it was as big. It's way bigger in this country than it is back in the States. But I was thrilled at this opportunity. Honestly, it's like, people are like, why are you doing this? I'm like, why the hell not? Yeah. You know, this is amazing to get to live in the city, to get to reintroduce myself to this audience that always loved me and grew up with me, and to try something I've never done before. I mean, it's like, it's a win-win-win.
And regardless of win or lose, you're going to stay in the UK
I'm
for
here.
2 months.
Yeah.
And is your man over here with you?
No, but he's coming.
Okay, good.
He's coming in.
He's
got to
be there in the live shows. Right?
I know. We're figuring it out now. He's coming.
Who have you bonded with?
What do you mean? On the show?
Yeah, like the other celebs.
Everyone. I mean, everyone's
have you got
really
close
nice.
To anyone in particular? I guess it's
I
still
like
quite
Kevin,
early days.
I really feel close. I feel like my partner in crime is Kevin what's his last name?
Mikhail,
he's great. They're all lovely. Victoria's lovely. The Love Island people are a riot. That's Samira. she's got really funny. Everything that comes out of her mouth is really funny. They're all great. They're all terrific.
I found the meeting with the Love Islanders hilarious because they were too young to know your show and you had
Did you watch the show?
Who they were.
It was so funny because I truly I'd never heard of Love Island.
Yeah.
I now have been brought up to speed. But and they had no idea who I was. It was really funny.
What about Martin Bashir?
I love him. Oh my God. Did he make you cry? Did you well up?
Yeah, that was an incredible moment for his brother.
Yes.
Wow.
I honestly think
And you looked very emotional watching
I
him,
was.
Actually.
Oh my God, I had that weepy face that I used to give on my talk show all the time. The difference was I didn't have my hand over my cheek, right? That was like
an
the quintessential
shot.
You know, and it's so funny because I was just like involuntary. Martin Bashir, you know, it just goes to show that you don't necessarily have to have the best voice to do well in this thing. Because I think he's going to do really well. I think the audience is going to get behind him. In fact, I'm behind him. I'm rooting for Martin Bashir.
Now, there was a bit of a controversy in the first episode over the treatment of Brendan Cole and Jeremy Edwards, who were, you know, the duo, who felt that the judges
were... What was the controversy? They were rough...
They felt that they got a bit of rough treatment.
I have to agree. It did seem a little harsh. But I think that's part of what we signed up for. I'm guessing I'm going to have my moment where they're going to be harsh with me too.
Were they unhappy behind the scenes? Because it looked like it was quite tense.
I don't think they were happy.
Yeah.
I think they were good sports. And certainly I just saw them a few days ago at the press thing. They're really good sports. They realize, you know, even if you don't last... the whole way. This is what a great platform.
Well, I think
is.
They've got to come back.
Yeah,
as
you
the
think
wild
so?
Cards. I think so because everyone's talking about them after that first episode. And it's a bit like.
They're so sweet.
Number one, I'm like, They were given a bad song. I mean, come on. Who on earth? I mean, I love Kylie Minogue. Love at First Sight by Kylie Minogue. And they're two straight men. I think
they chose their song. I'm going to go out on a limb because I think we were in full control. Well,
that was like a terrible choice.
Okay.
Number two, I thought
song choice.
I thought you're two straight men singing about love at first sight, like your two male friends. It was a bit weird. And I actually thought Brendan Cole had quite a good voice as well.
You did. Okay.
I mean, decent, given he's a dancer. Better than I thought.
We all
were
a little nervous. I don't know if you noticed, like, all
they
of
need
us.
Another chance, Ricky. Would you be angry if they came back?
No, I wouldn't be angry. The more the merrier.
Okay.
Let's keep this thing going, yeah.
I think
it has to happen. Let's turn it into 12 weeks, not 8,
because
right?
they went quite viral, you see, after
they did?
The
okay, I'm not up on... I saw a lot of the comments. You know, I saw, like, that people love Jenny, right? Jenny from the Chris Show? She's great, too.
That's gone international because, you know, The Chase is a big show. So, for example, I'm getting all of these friends talking about it in New Zealand because The Chase is this big show in New Zealand. So that went viral. Absolutely.
So X Factor is playing over there?
I think they play it on delay, yeah. But I think just in this world that we live in now, a lot of the clips have gone viral via YouTube and people talking about it on Twitter. So
she was great. She was a big surprise.
It. So this will be an international moment for you, Ricky, on
Amazing.
Saturday.
Bring it.
You're their international star.
Oh, my goodness. When
There's
you say
a lot of
like
pressure
that,
on you.
No, I mean, I don't have that pressure on myself. I mean, my thing is I don't want to mess up the words.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
Because they don't allow you to have the auto-cue.
They do not
anything,
allow.
Do they?
They don't allow a teleprompter.
But come on, you've learnt lines for years.
I know, but I feel like in how I've aged, my brain does not remember things like it used to.
And so, where do you see this going? I mean, you win a record contract, right?
Yes, I'm not expecting to win a record contract. I'm just saying that. Okay,
yeah.
I'm a realist. I'm gonna go. I made you pretty well, but
well, I want
do
you to
not
bloody
think
win.
You want me to win? You're very sweet. You haven't even heard me sing yet.
Let's, don't
why,
care.
Why don't you hold
don't,
off?
No, I don't even care.
Judgment.
I don't
you're,
even care.
You're very sweet, but I don't know. I mean, I just think I'm really here for this experience. I'm super grateful to be here in London during this time of year. I'm grateful I have my partner with me, my little dog, and I'm just gonna hang on to this brass ring for as long as I can.
And finally, Go Ricky, Go Ricky. I have to ask you about it. How did it start?
It started organically, honestly.
Literally, just the crowd.
Literally, it started with the audience probably in the beginning of my first season in 1993. And it just turned into this like mantra, which is so funny that I walk into a room and people will do it. And it's like, wait a minute, so you want me to go? It's like, it's basically saying to leave.
Because it was the end of the show, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's funny. It's one of those things that has stuck. And I would imagine when we do the live shows, it might
pop. Oh my goodness,
out.
I cannot wait for that first live show. I'm going to have to be there actually
I
and
hope
start
so.
The chant
Please.
Myself.
Go, Ricky, let's go, let's Ricky. Hang out afterwards. We'll
oh,
go and celebrate.
Ricky, like, I adore you.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
You're a superstar. Thank
pleasure,
you so much.
Pleasure to meet you in person. Thank you.
Thank you, Ricky. Ricky Lake, what a woman. And if you are in the UK and you're voting for X Factor Celebrity, we need to keep her in. I seriously want Go Ricky, Go Ricky for the final of X Factor Celebrity. Loved that interview. Of course, on a recent podcast, we had James Blunt here. Lots of feedback about that, actually. He opened up about the very difficult circumstances that his dad is currently in with his health. And Nicola Walker wrote to say, James Blunt is my number one. Love his humour, his view on life and his music, sending him love about his dad's ill health. Then, of course, as well, we spoke about the way that James Blunt has been dealing with his haters on Twitter and how, in fact, it's given him a whole new leash of life. And we've had lots of response to that. Jake Harrison said James Blunt is the undisputed king of dealing with the trolls, that's for sure. Ines Vasey said, let's be kind, folks, in real life and on Twitter too. And Dupers said, and I love this comment actually, for all the suppressed emotional expression the Brits are known for, this poor chap does all the output for you. Rob, on that level, said, never realised you were such a funny effer. I might troll you, though, for a laugh, just to get a witty comeback. Hats off, sir, and sorry to hear about your dad. So it's a really, really powerful interview, actually. James Blunt opening up about so much. So that's in the back catalogue. If you subscribe now, you can listen to that for free, plus all of our other recent interviews. This year, we've had Dolly Parton, we've had Emma Bunton, we've had Celine Dion, we've had Madonna. So lots of must-listen interviews for you there. Do subscribe, and you'll also get the next episode as soon as it becomes available. But I'm Dan Wharton. Thank you so much for listening. Let me know what you think about this interview with Ricky Lake today. I love getting your feedback. Just find me on social media. I'm at Dan Wharton on Instagram, on Facebook, and on Twitter, and we'll read out the best comments on the next episode of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening today. Thank you for Ricky Lake for being such an inspiration to me and an amazing woman.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.